I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the prosecutors. Today on The Prosecutors, we begin our investigation into the murders in Delphi, Indiana, of Abigail Williams and Liberty German. But we're not going to solve this case. You are. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Prosecutors. I'm Brett, and I'm joined, as always, with my transcendent co-host, Alice.
Good job, Brett. I know you were really worried about how to introduce me. That was really good.
I was. You know, people hear us say that, and they probably don't think it's true, but it actually is something I kind of struggle with. I mean, I guess if you truly were transcendent, I wouldn't struggle with it. It would just come to me automatically. So I don't know if I'm misleading the audience or what.
I feel like that you're getting into like these digs and I don't know where they're coming from. Is there some angst I don't know about?
No, never. Never. I'm not jealous of you and all the love you get from the listeners. That would never be the case.
That would never be the case because your fan base is probably my favorite thing about this podcast. You ladies are the best. You make me smile.
Whatever. We got an email recently that was like, hello, Brett. And then, hello, all of these wonderful things about Alice. So I don't want to hear it. People love Alice. Don't listen to her.
We really do love you guys. I want you to know that this episode is a long time coming. I know that we announced on Twitter that we were looking into this case, and we have done extensive research, and we've even begun to start recording and then decide that we were not in our best minds, in our best energy in order to record it. It was too long of a day at work or what have you. And typically we just power through it. No matter how long the day is, we were like, this is the Brett and Alice everyone's going to get. But this case, I think, is really stayed with me, Brett. Of all the cases that we have done episodes on, this one has really actually haunted my sleep. I don't know if it's the absolute senselessness of it, the fact that it was two young girls and, you know, we both have children. I don't know what it is, but it is absolutely just gripping to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, this is not a case I really wanted to do. For all those reasons, it's just such a, you know, I made a joke, not about this case, but how some true crime case, I found it depressing. And somebody was like, haha, like, not like all the other true crime cases. And look, I mean, there's some truth to that. There are very few true crime cases that don't involve tragedy of some sort. But this one's different. And I think it's different for a lot of people. And I think the audience will understand that. I'll say this. I think of all the cases out there, this is the one we've gotten the most request for. It's certainly on our Patreon page. I mean, this is the case that most people wanted to hear about. And honestly, at the end of the day, and I'll say this, I said at the very beginning of this episode, we're not going to solve this case. It's going to be solved by somebody out there. And that is 100% true. We're not doing this case because we think Brett and Alice are so brilliant that we'll talk about it and all of a sudden it'll be obvious who did it. We're doing it because everybody needs to talk about this case, because this is a case, as much as any case we've talked about, where it will be solved because of people not stopping looking at this case, talking about this case, thinking about this case. There is someone out there who knows who this is that we're going to talk about over the next couple days. I believe that, and I think it's important. I think it's an important case to do. And as much as, you know, Alice, you said it haunts you, I think that's a great way to describe it.
Well, that's quite the lead up. And also, I want you all to know, because Brett is a really big teddy bear, if you can't already tell from this podcast, but we were ready to start recording and we had to delay for a few minutes because his sweet, sweet daughter was snuggling him as if she knew that he was about to have to go record one of the most heartbreaking true crime episodes that we've encountered yet.
Yeah, and she's a sweetheart, but usually she's not that sweet. But tonight, she was just, I don't know, she was something else. So, yeah, got delayed a little bit, but that's fine. Like Al said, she gave us some good energy. You guys know we approach these cases, we try and bring some levity and some humor to them. I don't think you're going to see that in this case, frankly. We don't do a lot of ongoing investigations, at least not of cases that are this recent and sort of this hot. So, you know, we're looking at this one a little bit differently. Also, I'll just tell you, our release schedule is going to be different on this. I'm not exactly sure how many episodes this will end up being, but we're doing at least 2 weeks on this, even if we just do two episodes, just because I just want this case to hang around a little bit longer in people's minds. I want people to focus on it a little bit more. I don't necessarily want to move on from it as quickly as we normally do. So this is going to be at least 2 weeks of episodes on this. As you guys know, probably out there, there's not a whole lot on it. I'll just give you another warning. We're going to talk about some rumors. We're not going to talk about all the rumors that are out there. If you follow this on Reddit, you know there's a lot. We're going to talk about the rumors that at least seem to have some substance to them. Another thing we're not going to do, we're not going to go through the suspects that people have in this case. That's not what we're doing. Like I said, this case is going to be solved because someone's memory is triggered and they call in a tip to the police and the police follow up on it. That's how it's going to be solved. It's not going to be solved by people digging through Facebook and trying to compare pictures to the sketches we have. So, you know, that's not going to be what we encourage or what we do. We're going to talk about this case. We're going to talk about the facts we have. And we're going to think about it critically and see if we can at least come up with some idea of the kind of person who might have done this to give you guys out there who may know something and not even know it. If we can trigger something in you, you know, that's what I'd like to do. A lot of you guys know about Ted Bundy, obviously, serial killer, and his girlfriend at the time, she thought he was a wonderful man, and she didn't think he was a murderer, but she kept hearing things in the news about this guy who was preying on women, and there were things about him that reminded her of Ted, and she eventually called in a tip, and that's one of the reasons they caught him. That's what we want to happen here. We want somebody who's listening, who knows something, to call in that tip that's going to be the one that makes all the difference in the world. So that's what we're after. A lot of people have covered this case, but this is one that can't be covered enough. So I think with that, we'll go ahead and start talking about it. We've talked about this case as if it's one that you guys all know, and I think it probably is. I think of all the cases out there, this is the one people want solved the most. And it starts in 2017. And the story we have to tell is a pretty short one. It was February 13th, 2017, and in just about any other year, it would have been too cold in Delphi, Indiana, on that day to do much of anything outside. But for whatever reason, that year had been particularly warm, and it also, there hadn't been as much snow as there would have been in other years. And I don't know, Alice, if this is the way it was where you went to school, but where I went to school, we always had a few weather days built in, and if at the end of the winter season we hadn't used those days, we were going to get days off.
Yes, we loved those. It would be like built-in snow days, just in case, or hurricane days, tornado days, what have you. Bad weather days is what we called them, and we looked forward to them near the end of usually the winter, when it was unlikely to have any more snow days.
And that's exactly what you had this day. I believe it was a Monday, February 13th, that day, and it was unusually warm. Now, I say it was unusually warm. In Alabama, in February, that probably means the 70s or the 80s. In Indiana, it meant the mid-40s to the low 50s. Alice, I'm sure when you were growing up in Texas, it was the same thing. A little bit warmer than 40s and 50s. 40s and 50s, to me, sounds like a little too cold to go outside. But I guess if you live in Indiana, that's like balmy.
Absolutely. No, it is. I spent a lot of time in Chicago, which is close by, and man, those are some brutal winters with tough winds, and you can hardly step outside, so when it's mid-40s, it actually feels like a 60 or 70 when you've had a rough winter.
And yeah, and I'm sure everybody had been stuck inside for a long time, and they were ready to get out, and on that day, they had the day off, and the kids in town, there's not a whole lot to do in Delphi. We're going to talk about Delphi a little bit. Not a big city. Wouldn't even necessarily call it a town. It's more like kind of a village in Indiana, a few thousand people, you know, not a whole lot to do unless you're into the outdoors. And on that day, two friends, Liberty Libby German and Abigail Abby Williams, decided that there would be no better way to spend this beautiful day than outside on the historic trails of Delphi. So like I said, Delphi is a small town. We're talking about 3,000 people. It's rural with a good amount of farmland around it. Its big yearly event is the Indiana Bacon Festival, which basically sounds like the greatest thing ever. I would like to go to the Bacon Festival one day if I could. But one thing that you could do is you could go out to the trails and the Monon High Bridge.
Right. And Brett, we'll talk about this more later, but even though one of the things you can do is go out to the Monon High Bridge or to these trails, it was really a local thing. This wasn't some big tourist attraction where people drove down from Chicago or the other big cities to visit. So it's kind of a local place to go. Libby convinced her older sister, Kelsey, to drop them off at the trail that led them to the Monon High Bridge. And the Monon High Bridge is one of the tallest bridges in Indiana. Kelsey was going to work, and so she said, sure, I will drop you off. And she drove the girls to a drop-off point near the trails, and it was 1 p.m. The girls were going to be picked up at 3 o'clock by Libby's father, Derek. Three came. Derek waited. The girls didn't show. At first, Derek didn't think much of it, but as time ticked by, his fears began to rise. When the girls didn't show, a search was launched. The authorities found their bodies the next day. The autopsies confirmed what the police already knew. The girls had been murdered, and a nightmare had begun. One that would not end for Libby and Abby's families until their killer is brought to justice.
And so that's a short story. You know, normally we spend a long time on the story, but that's what happened that day. And instead of spending a lot of time sort of building up to the story and stretching that out, we want to spend a lot of time on the timeline of what happened that day. And some of the things we're going to talk about here, I said this earlier, they're not necessarily confirmed. As many of you who follow this know, the police have been very tight-lipped about a lot of the details in this case. We have explained before why that is, that police often keep back information, both to use one day in a prosecution, to determine who the killer might be, to prevent false confessions. There's all sorts of reasons they do it, to protect the privacy of the victims. That has happened in this case. At some point, we're going to talk about the wisdom of that in this case and what we think about that. But regardless, because of that, beyond what we just told you, there's not a ton of information out there. And in some ways, there's more public information than what the police have made public, if that makes sense. Remember, this is a very small town, 3,000 people. When the girls went missing, there was a search. Many of the girls' family members were in that search. A lot of people who knew them were in that search. People who've talked since then. So there are some things sort of in looking in this case and reading about this case that we're going to talk about that aren't necessarily confirmed. We will flag that for you when it's not confirmed so that you know what is possibly supposition, what is possibly rumor. But like I said, it's February 13th, 2017, and we know that Kelsey dropped the girls off. The girls wanted to go to the Monon High Bridge. They wanted to go to the trails. They were very excited about doing so. And they'd actually asked Kelsey a couple times if she would do it. And at first, she said no, she didn't really have time. She was going to go to work. She had plans with her boyfriend. She had other things to do. But at some point, she started to feel a little guilty about that, about not just taking a few minutes to drop the girls off. And so finally, she agreed to do it. And the girls were so excited to go off to the trails that, you know, they didn't even take a jacket. Kelsey had to force her sister, Libby, to even take a jacket with her because, you know, I guess the girls thought that mid-40s, low-50s was pretty warm too. So Kelsey takes the girls to the trails and she drops them off at a location. We have a map that has been put together by some of the folks who have looked into this quite a bit. We're going to put that map up on the website just so you see it. We did not create it. Don't want to claim ownership of it, but we will share it. And I don't think the people who did create it would mind that at all. But if you know anything about the trail, and we spent some time on Google Maps and everything looking at this, there's sort of an entrance close to what's called the Freedom Bridge. And then there's an entrance further down that people would use. And it was at that sort of further down, closer to the Monin High Bridge entrance that Kelsey dropped the girls off at. So to give you some idea of the timeline, and this first part is unconfirmed, but it will become important later. At 1:26 p.m., a 16-year-old female witness is with a group of friends near the Freedom Bridge. So that's up sort of at the beginning of the trails, like I said. You've probably got a half mile you have to walk down the trails from there to get to where the girls were dropped off. And the friends are getting ready to leave. The 16-year-old is taking a picture on her phone. At about 1:30 p.m., she's near the benches, near the Freedom Trail, and she notices a man and says hello to him. And this person gives her a look, and for whatever reason, that look frightened her. And since it frightened her, she remembered this instance. She said that she passed him on a narrow trail. She was just a few feet away from him. She said his height was around 5 feet 6 inches tall, maybe an inch taller. Now, this becomes important. We're going to talk about eventually someone who has come to be known as Bridge Guy, and you're going to see why that is when we get to that point. Law enforcement believes that Bridge Guy is someone who is likely the assailant in this case, probably the person who killed the two girls. And according to law enforcement, Bridge Guy is between 5'6 and 5'8, exactly as this girl describes this person. Later on, when she heard that Abby and Libby were missing, she thought about the man that she saw and she called it in as a tip to the police. She described Bridge Guy, and like I said, this is not confirmed. So this is unconfirmed, but I think you can probably assume it's true. She described Bridge Guy without having seen any other evidence of him. We're going to talk about what that evidence is later. And she gave a description that would match that evidence. Blue jeans, blue coat, hoodie, pulled up over a short billed hat. That's how she described this person. So, and we're going to do this a lot, but if you're listening to this podcast, I want you to stop for a second and think about that description. 5'6 to 5'8, wearing blue jeans, a blue coat, and a hoodie pulled up over a short billed hat. Does that remind you of anyone? He also had some sort of covering over the lower half of his face. It could have been the lower part of the hoodie. This witness eventually will be responsible for one of the renderings of the suspect.
So really quick, Brett, let's talk about what that man is wearing. We had talked at length earlier that it was a warm day. So warm, in fact, that Libby wasn't, I think she was just wearing a shirt, not a jacket, not a sweatshirt. And her sister, Kelsey, had to force her to take, I think, a sweatshirt. Here we have a man wearing long pants and not just a sweatshirt, but a sweatshirt, a hoodie, as well as a blue coat over it and a hat. You know, some people have said that this is overdressed for the weather. And having spoken to people who are familiar with this area and know this weather, agree that, in fact, Bridge Guy was wearing too many clothes for the weather.
And I just want to go back to what we were just talking about. For me, when I hear, you know, growing up in the South, and I think of, you know, what I wear when it's 40 or 50 degrees out, that doesn't strike me as a lot of clothes. You know, my mom, she would probably be wearing, I mean, who knows what she'd be wearing. I mean, if the temperature drops below 70, she thinks it's freezing cold. But like you, you know, having lived up in Boston and experiencing those winters, it's amazing how much you change. You spend, you know, a couple winters in Boston and all of a sudden it's 40 degrees outside and you're wearing shorts and a short sleeve shirt because it has been so cold for so long that that feels warm. and you're wearing that in a time like this, where it's the first warm time, it's still February, you know, it's not like it's been warm a lot. These people, there's a reason that Libby didn't want a jacket, and Abby's, you know, just wearing sort of a light jacket over her clothes. And I got to think, if you're used to those winters and you're somebody who's used to it being that cold and you have this kind of weather, you're not going to be dressed like that just because you're cold. There is more going on there. And while this witness doesn't say it, she says she remembers this person because of sort of the weird look he gave her. I wonder if part of that weird look was an intuitive knowledge that he was wearing too many clothes for the situation. So that's around, like I said, 126, 130. At around this time, Abby and Libby are getting a ride to the bridge. So around 130 is when they're leaving. It's when they're headed that way. Between about 138 and 145, that's when the girls are dropped off at the entrance that we talked about earlier. It's the Mary Gerard Nature Preserve where they're dropped off. And Libby calls her dad, Derek, to arrange pickup between 3 and 3:30. So the whole idea is they're going to be there for a couple hours. That's it. And then they're going home.
To give people an idea, Brett, can you tell us about how far the Freedom Bridge is from where the girls were dropped off in terms of walking? How long would it take to walk from the Freedom Bridge to about the area that they were dropped off in?
From the Freedom Bridge to where the girls dropped off, were dropped off, it's probably about 15 minutes. It's probably another 15 minutes or so from where they were dropped off to the High Bridge. Now, you know, that's probably for teenagers. It'd probably take me longer because I'm slower and in worse shape. But yeah, I mean, we're not talking a huge area here. Probably talking about a mile and a half from the Freedom Bridge to the Monon High Bridge. So not much longer, not much further than that. But I think one thing to note is if the unconfirmed report by the 16-year-old is true, then the person who murdered the girls was already there around 1:30 when they were on their way. Now, it is interesting that if this person was near the Freedom High Bridge and they are dropped off around 1:45, 15 minutes from the Freedom High Bridge, maybe that tells you something. Maybe that's where they were seen. It's hard to say. That's going to be mostly speculation.
Except that the timing would work out.
The timing would work out. The timing would work out. So the girls have arranged pickup, like I said, 3 to 3:30. So they got about 2 hours they're going to be out there. Between 1:45, so sort of the later time when they might have been dropped off, and 2:07, we know that Libby takes a picture of Abby on and posts it on Snapchat, and Abby is on High Bridge at this point. Now, we don't know exactly when the photo was taken, but we do know that it was initially accessed on Snapchat at 2:07. So the photo had to be taken before then. Hard to say exactly how much earlier, but once again, if you're thinking about how long it takes to get from where they were dropped off to the bridge itself, could have been much more before that, because the bridge, it's the tallest bridge in Indiana, or this kind of railroad bridge, wooden railroad bridge in Indiana. It's abandoned. It's not in the best shape. There are sort of big gaps between the planks on this bridge. I would probably be absolutely terrified. I have thought about if I went there, would I be able to cross this bridge? And I'm not actually sure that I would be able to do it. People talk about having to crawl across this bridge the first time they do it because it's kind of scary. So if you see this photo, this Snapchat photo, and we're going to post it on the website, Abby's pretty far across the bridge, and it's pretty clear that Liberty is, I mean, she's even further across the bridge than where Abby is. So I don't think they're running across this bridge. So I think it's probably pretty close to 2:07 p.m. when this photo is taken.
And just so you know, to situate you, this bridge is very long, and the view of it is Libby is further down the bridge, and she's taking the picture so that the direction she's looking in is where you would come from. And you'll notice that Abby's looking down because, like Brett said, this is a very rickety old bridge and you could, there are gaps large enough for a person to fall through. So you have to be careful in crossing it. And it's almost like this is exactly what 12 and 13 year olds would be doing because you kind of get a thrill out of it. It's exciting. I would be terrified, but I can see why this would be a fun thing to do.
Now, one thing to note about this photo, there's no one else on the bridge with Abby in this photo. So there's a lot of controversy about where Bridge Guy is at this point. Some people think he's already crossed the bridge and he's sort of waiting for the girls. Other people think he has not yet started to cross the bridge. If you look at the photo, if you look all the way at the end to where the bridge begins, there is a shadow, a sort of dark spot on this photo that kind of looks like it could be a person. And it's possible that that sort of dark shadow all the way at the end of the bridge, having not yet started to cross it, is Bridge Guy.
Now, between 2:15 and 2:30, the girls begin to film a man walking across the bridge towards them. An image from this video is later released by the police. In it, the man, who's approximately 65 feet away from the girls, so he's not close, and he is crossing the bridge looking down.
And I think this is important to note. As Alice said, he's not close. And we're going to talk about this image a lot, and it is frustratingly unclear, this image. It will be on the website. You can look at it yourself if you haven't seen it yet. The reason it is frustratingly unclear is because he is 65 feet away at this point, and it's just not a good photo.
What we learn later is that this video actually came from Libby's phone, and she starts taking the video, and from what we understand is she continues filming throughout the meeting of the man until their ultimate murders. And what's interesting is the fact that she begins to film this guy who is very far away. There is more to the video than has been released. We only have really a second and a half of this man walking. I want you to keep that in mind because we're going to discuss this later. What made Libby start to record a man who is still pretty far away? And looking at this bridge, it looks wide enough, like you could cross someone, two people could go in different directions on it. But what we've been told is that because it is so rickety, typically you would move to one side if you saw someone coming in the other direction to let one person pass so two people were not passing at the same time, again, because you kind of had to keep your attention on the bridge. And so one would step back, let the other person pass before they continued on their way. This trail, this bridge, dead ends at the end of the bridge. So where the direction that Libby is currently taking this picture, behind her, there's really nothing. It's just going into the wilderness or back across the bridge. So I think the purpose of going on this bridge often is just for people to take pictures, to get the thrill of crossing, but you don't cross it in order to go somewhere. Once the girls reach the end of the bridge, they really have nowhere to go. A fact that they actually discuss in the video.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to remember because this was something that kind of confused me a little bit when I first got into this, is this is the bridge itself, I don't think is really part of the trail. It's just more like something people go to cross and to see and to do. And once you get across that bridge, there's nowhere to go. Now, you can go off sort of off trail and into the wilderness. And we're going to see that's exactly what happens, but it's not necessarily a thing that you would think to do in that circumstance because you're crossing the bridge to cross the bridge. That's why you're doing it. You know, why do you climb a mountain? Because it's there. Same thing with the bridge. You're just crossing it for the experience. You take a picture and then you go back and you're done. And then you're back on the trails doing whatever you wanted to do. So in this circumstance, you can sort of imagine you have these girls who are across the bridge. They're at a dead end. They have decided for some reason, and like Alice said, this has been a cause of endless speculation, why they did this, why did they start filming? But for some reason, they are filming, and in a brief snippet of that film, they catch this person who is crossing the bridge towards them. And you're going to see the video, and you can see that he is quickly crossing the bridge towards them. And they're sort of having a conversation about how there's really nowhere to go, right? I mean, they really have a couple choices. They could start to cross the bridge and have to walk right beside this person on a very narrow bridge, like Alice said, not really the kind of bridge you necessarily want to be side by side with somebody on. They could wait until the person gets there, and then they can cross the bridge. Or, I mean, they could, I guess, scramble down the hill and run off into the woods, but that would be a pretty extreme thing to do. Not necessarily thinking that they're in danger, they're probably not going to do that. Now, it seems pretty clear they think this guy's weird. They're discussing him approaching them for a reason. They're talking about their options for a reason.
But the video itself, and I know we only have a very short snippet, it's not obvious that they're in immediate danger. He's not giving chase. He's not moving rapidly. We're not shown an emergent situation. And I can imagine doing something like scrambling off trail quickly when someone's just walking slowly towards you may seem unmatched. It would be a strange thing to do. So I note that while it's weird that they are, while the situation is strange enough for Libby to start filming, it's not clear from the video itself that they are in emergent danger.
And we talked to Kelsey, who was, or who is, Libby's sister, about this, and got a lot to say about her. She's awesome. But we talked to her about Libby and about sort of the kind of girl she was. Would she be observant? Would she have noticed this? And Kelsey said that she was the kind of person who paid attention to her surroundings, who would notice if there were people acting in strange ways. So she wasn't someone who was oblivious. And I guess that sort of goes to this. She must have recognized something in this person that made her think, I should start recording now. Maybe they had passed him earlier on the trail and they got the same kind of strange vibe from him that the 16-year-old witness got that we were talking about earlier. Maybe for whatever reason, he just seemed strange to them and she wanted to start recording. One thing that does seem clear, you know, we talk about this video, and the video is where this image comes from. It's where the photo comes from. It's pulled from this video. We have, like Alice said, about a minute and a half of video that we've seen. A second and a half of video that we've seen. So it's not just Libby standing at the end of the bridge filming down the bridge as this person approaches. It's almost like she recognized this person was approaching. She wanted to film something, but she didn't necessarily want him to know. So she sort of, you know, almost maybe panned across the bridge with her phone, caught him for a second and a half, and then kept going, or maybe even at that point, put the phone in her pocket. It's unclear. But it's not a situation where she's standing at the end of the bridge just filming this person as they approach.
Right. And one thing that her sister, Kelsey, told us is that, you know, we asked her, did Libby do things like this before? And she remembered a situation in which Libby noticed that some guys were walking in the same direction as them. And Kelsey did not think anything of it. And she thinks it probably still was nothing, but Libby tended to be on the cautious side. So she said to Kelsey in this one instance, let's not go into the store where they were planning on going because these guys have been behind us for a while. Let's go somewhere else first before we come back to this store. So by the way, I just have to note that's incredibly wise. These are things that usually adults or more experienced people know to do, not 13-year-olds. And so, you know, for whatever reason, she really did have this sense about her. And she was also smart enough not to just stand there openly and film this guy. Brett, we'll get more into this later, but I think the fact that he's so far away and she films him in a way as to disguise the fact that she's filming leads me to think that she had seen him earlier. And it wasn't the fact that he was crossing or coming down the bridge when they were already on the bridge that made her nervous. Because we also asked Kelsey, would it be strange for multiple people to be on the bridge? And while she said that you won't usually find a whole party on the bridge because it is a scary bridge crossing, but it's not uncommon, especially on a good day, a good weather day, to have a couple of people on the bridge and you may have to cross them. So I think the fact that someone's walking towards them alone probably wouldn't set off alarms. So my gut feeling is that something happened before the man started crossing the bridge that made her uneasy. And she recognized that this was a man who made her uneasy when she saw that he started coming down the bridge.
And look, I mean, we've said this is going to be, these are just different kinds of episodes, and they are. So I'm just going to go ahead and say this, and I'm going to repeat it again later. But I really want people out there to think about Delphi and to think about these trails. If you have been on those trails, people have asked you 1,000 times to think about February 13th and what you saw on that day if you were there. I want you to go further than that. I want you to think to every single time you have been on those trails for it, go back as far as you want. And think about whether or not you've ever seen anyone out there that gave you the creeps, that made you feel weird. Because what is interesting about this is if you believe that first unconfirmed report that I said, he made that person feel strange. He made them feel weird. You know, you see 12 people a day. If you go out walking outside on some trails, you're going to see tons of people out. Some of them are going to be by themselves. Some are going to be with their families. Some are going to be with their dogs, but you're going to see them. You're going to see people, and you're going to forget 99% of them. But this person remembered this guy, and something about him also triggered something in these very young girls, these 13, 14-year-old girls, to think, that guy is strange. We need to watch out for him. He's coming across the bridge. We need to start filming. So there is something about him, at least on that day. And I got to think, if it was that way on that day, it's been that way before. So even if you think it has nothing to do with this case, if you have been in that situation before in Delphi or its environs, I want you to think about that. And I want you to think about whether or not it's possible that that person that you ran into or that person that you know matches this description. Now, around 2:30, this guy gets across the bridge and he reaches the girls where the girls are waiting. And he says, guys, down the hill. We are going to play that for you now. This is the cleaned up audio that was released. Down the Hill was released first. About a year later, the police had a press conference where they added the word guys. There is a gap between guys and Down the Hill. It seems that most people think there has been perhaps a second excised from that. It might be the girls saying something, but we think that these come pretty close together and it's the same person. So we are going to play that for you now. So you're going to hear this audio. We're going to play it a couple times.
Guys. Down the hill. Guys. Down the hill. Guys. Down the hill.
If you are watching this on YouTube, not only did you just hear the audio, you saw the video. That is all we have as far as the video goes. 1.5 seconds. This was another thing the police, they waited a while to release. Now, we on the website, we're going to post the link to the police's video where they take this audio, they put it over bridge guy walking, and they sort of play it in a loop. So we're going to have that on the website. If you heard that or you saw that and it triggered anything, go to the website and watch it. And watch it as many times as you need to.
So, Brett, let's talk about that. There's a lot to talk about there, even though it's so little. There's word choice, there's inflection, and there's choice of words. So let's start with guys.
Yeah, guys. Now, here's one thing about guys. There are people who think that the fact he says guys indicates that he knows the girls or is familiar with them in some way, even if he knows them only generally. Imagine, you know, a teacher or a coach or whatever. Personally, I don't necessarily get that. I'm not saying he doesn't know them, and I'm not saying that that's not a result of him knowing them, that he says guys. I call everybody guys. I mean, that's one of my words that I use. I don't know about you, Alice.
Yeah, I agree with that. rather than it showing familiarity, I think it shows trying to strike a relaxed tone.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Just sort of like disarming in a way.
Catching someone's, disarming, and also to catch their attention, right? They probably, even if they were looking at him, they weren't talking to him before, probably. And so he's trying to catch their attention. And I will say, when someone acts more familiar with me in public and they are a stranger to me, I am more likely to take a second if they act like they know me. So if someone just out of the blue is like, ma'am, I don't necessarily think they're talking to me, right? Because I'm like, who calls me ma'am? You clearly don't know me, so I don't think you're necessarily talking to me. But if someone, and I don't know if you've had this situation where someone's walking down the street and they intentionally say something even though they don't know you. I've had panhandlers do this to me, saying, oh, hey, how you doing? Yeah. As if we're in the middle of a conversation, and it works. It stops me because I think, oh, were we just talking? And so right. To me, the guys may not necessarily mean he's familiar with them, but rather to make sure they stop and take a look at him because he's trying to continue this conversation. It's not just a sup and you walk on. Because if you pass right. people in the trails, you may not say hello, or you may just kind of nod your head. And that doesn't indicate, just because you nod your head at someone or do a quick, hey, that doesn't indicate you want to stop and have a conversation with them. But the guys, I think, indicates there's more I want to say.
Yeah. And I think it's even possible, and this is all speculation, we just don't know. The girls are standing at the end of the bridge. They want to cross back going the other way. They are probably eager to do so, particularly because they see somebody coming towards them that they don't really want to have any interaction with. You could sort of imagine him stepping off the bridge and they start moving towards the bridge. And he sort of captures them with guys. He says that, and that stops them, kind of like what you're saying. They stop, they look at him, and then he gives the command. So he's stopped them, and now he says, and maybe even, you could even imagine him saying guys to them, turning around, looking back across that bridge, seeing if anybody's coming. They're not coming. Then he gives the command down the hill.
Right, because there is kind of a tone change between guys and down the hill. Guys does sound very casual, I will say, whereas down the hill, his tone changes. And I think that's why the police had to specify this is the same person talking, because the tone is so different. And the down the hill is a very authoritative command.
Yeah. And he even says, guys, the way you said it, it's like a rising, the way his voice is going, it's rising. It's guys, and then down the hill. And like you said, I mean, the down the hill is, and we're going to talk about this probably a lot, but there is a tone of command in those three words that to me says a lot. There's a couple things about this. Like you said, you can tell a lot from just these four words, what the words are and how he says them. I hear somebody who is not nervous, who knows exactly what they're going to do, who is used to telling people what to do, and probably in particular is used to telling children what to do. I mean, he says this with such authority in his voice that there's no way they were going to do anything but what he said, just based on the way he said it. And that may sound strange to people, but I think particularly with children, that way, that sort of command from an adult, I just don't think there was anything else they were going to do but exactly what he said for them to do in that moment.
Right. And, you know, if you've ever been, sometimes when I talk, especially in court, afterwards, my co-counsel or someone will say, whoa, you took out your mom voice, as in I spoke very authoritatively and it was with ease. I didn't have to think about it. Right. And while I don't think down the hill is his dad or mom voice, it sounds like someone who talks to kids, like you said, whether it be a coach or a teacher. And this is why we'll talk later about the type of person we think this is, but I don't think this is a teenager. There is an ease that comes with that authority that typically a 17 or 18-year-old I don't think has. It doesn't necessarily have to be someone very old, but someone who has enough seniority over a 13 or 14-year-old who can speak with such authority so easily.
We're going to return to this. If you don't think we've talked enough about the video or about what he's saying, I will say one other thing about this video. If you look at these 1.5 seconds that we have, there's a couple things about it. Number one, he's looking down. Now, that could be because he doesn't want anybody to see his face. It could be because he's trying to avoid slipping and falling through this bridge. He is moving very quickly. He is moving quickly, and he's moving with confidence. Now, you might think, well, that's adrenaline, but talking to Kelsey about this, and I think this is a pretty common view by people in Delphi, this was not his first time crossing that bridge. If it were, he would not have been able to move that quickly, even if he did have adrenaline. This is somebody who's crossed the bridge before. It's somebody who knows the bridge. They're not afraid that they're going to fall. And he needs to get across that bridge quickly because, once again, there's a lot of people out that day. This is not a day when there's nobody on the trails. If he's going to do this, he's got the opportunity right then. There's nobody there. But if it takes him too long to get across and somebody else shows up, his whole plan could be ruined. So he needs to move quickly. And you can see in the video, this person is moving quickly.
Right. And the reason you can't really move quickly across it, even if you were an agile, nimble person, if this were your first time, is because this is not a normal bridge with normal gaps in a certain pattern that you would know. So even if you have, say, a rickety, like a narrow staircase, if you're an agile, nimble person, you could probably run down those stairs because you know generally how stairs are spaced apart. Here we have a bridge that has fallen in disrepair and different boards have disintegrated over time. And so there's no rhyme or reason to the way the holes are set. And that's why, for those of you who may be thinking, well, it might just be how nimble this person is, those who know this bridge say, no, it is difficult to cross. Even one or two times, you probably cannot move that confidently. This is someone who has crossed it more than five or six times, at least.
And if I remember correctly, this is a railroad bridge. Right?
Right.
And this
right.
was originally a railroad bridge. So it's not a bridge that was made for people to be walking across. I mean, it's made not to fall down and it's made to hold trains, but it's not like whoever made this was thinking, oh, we need to space the boards perfectly so that, a person wouldn't fall through it or whatever. That's not what they were thinking. And I mean, this is just a difficult bridge to get across, and that's what everybody says. So nimble or not, this was not this guy's first rodeo.
Right. And now, after this guy's down the hill, we know there's more video. And so far, only law enforcement has seen the rest of the video. This is obviously speculation. My understanding is that there isn't much video after this because I think Libby pockets the phone but continues recording. So all we have is recording. And that would make sense because even the guys down the hill, it had to be enhanced greatly for us to understand the words down the hill. And I think it's probably because the phone is in the pocket. So there's a lot of cloth and barriers in the way. So it's a muffled sound. To be honest, before the video was enhanced, I couldn't make out the words down the hill. Could you?
No, I couldn't. I mean, I listened to it and I was like, we played around during our October episodes with, is a ghost going to talk on our thing or not? We were trying to get a what they call an EVP. And if you've ever heard one, it sounds like just sort of static on the recording that kind of has form to it. That may not make any sense, but that was sort of what it was for me when I heard it. I knew there was something there. Like I could hear the change in the static indicating speech, but I could not tell what was being said until it was greatly enhanced to the level you now have. There is a lot of controversy about the rest of this video. What's on the video? If there's anything useful on the video? If there's any more audio on the video? I have read that there's no more audio on the video. I've read there's no, you can't see anything. And I've heard that it doesn't capture the murder in any way. That basically by the time the murders happened, the video had stopped for whatever reason. There's a couple possibilities there. Apparently this version of the iPhone that this was recorded on stops recording if you receive a call. So it's possible a call came in and that stopped the recording. And since it was probably in her pocket, she wouldn't even have known that. Another thing you might be wondering is what about Abby's phone? Abby didn't have a phone. Her parents wouldn't let her have a phone. So the only phone that was present was Libby's phone. And that's what all of this information comes from.
And I want to note again that it would be one thing again for a man to give Libby and Abby enough pause for them to film, it would be yet another thing to continue recording and put it in your pocket. Because my understanding is the guy's part, so the greeting, is also had to be enhanced greatly. Meaning she had already put the phone continuing to record in her pocket or wherever, hidden, before he even spoke to them. That tells me a lot about their state of mind and how worried they were about this guy.
Yeah. And if you've listened to some of the other podcasts on this, and you should if you haven't, Down the Hill, Scene of the Crime are two podcasts that really dive into this. They're podcasts that just focus on this case for multiple episodes. There are things the police have said which I have difficulty fitting into this video. And Alice and I have talked about that. But Alice, you've mentioned this to me several times about the look on the girls' faces. I don't know if you want to share that with the audience.
Yeah. In the Down the Hill podcast, one of the law enforcement officers who did view the entirety of the video, he doesn't say what he sees, but he describes how he felt when he watched it. And he said it was something he could never unsee. And the reason it made him so sad and it haunted him for so long and continues to haunt him to this day is because the video captured the look on at least one of the girls' faces. And he said that their face revealed that they knew what was going to come.
And the first time I heard that, I thought, well, number one, it seems it has to be Abby, is what you would assume, given that it was Libby's phone, though I guess it's possible. Depending on how she was holding the phone, she obviously was trying to hide the fact that she was recording, so I guess it's possible she called her own face in it. But when I first heard that, I thought, you know, my mind went to the worst possible place, that essentially this video records the murder and she sees her friend being murdered and that's caught on camera. That doesn't seem to be what happened. It seems like whatever he's talking about must have happened much earlier. In fact, it must have happened before Bridge guy even got to them. If they have that level of fear on their face at that point, I think it does say a lot just about
when they first saw him.
Right. And whatever interaction that was when they first saw him, and for whatever reason, it must have just really, really creeped them out, almost to the point you imagine, you know, was this guy just sort of like standing off to the side, staring at people as they go by, and that sort of stereotypical serial killer in a horror movie way. I mean, I don't know. And the more I think about that, the more I just return to this idea that this behavior that he is showing has to be something he's shown before. This can't be something he can hide. It has to come out. I just can't imagine that in his ordinary life, nobody's ever thought, man, that guy gives me the creeps. I just can't believe that. And, you know, we're not asking that people start naming the folks that they think are creepy and posting their names on Reddit or Facebook. But once again, and I'm just going to keep coming back to this, if you even have a glimmer of thought that a certain person might fit this profile, you need to call the police in Delphi and let them know. They've received tens of thousands of tips. None of them have turned out. So you're not going to, I mean, you know, worst case, you tell them it doesn't turn out and the person never knows you called them in. Best case, you're the one who holds the key to this entire thing.
Right. And, you know, one thing, based on the way he says guys, it does sound to me like it's the first time he's ever spoken to them, which leads me to believe that they did see him previously on the trail before the guys, before he even started crossing. And I believe that whatever confrontation they had, I don't think it was verbal. I could be completely wrong. This is speculative, but just based on his intonation with the guys, I think that was the first time he spoke to them. And so what I imagine is that what do you think people are doing on a trail? They're walking, right? So if someone is not walking and they are doing something, say, leaning nonchalantly against a tree, picking their fingernail and watching people go by, I can imagine that would definitely give me the creeps if I am on a nature trail and that is someone's positioning. That's not what you do in the middle of the forest, right? Again, something like that would make my skin prick up, even if I didn't have a verbal conversation with that person. And I wonder if something like that had happened. Maybe he was at the start of the bridge And that's what he was doing. Maybe he even looked a little menacing physically. And maybe he even started moving towards the girls. And they were like, let's go across the bridge. Let's get away from him. And then when they turned around and saw him coming, they were like, oh no, we thought he was just going to go away. We crossed the bridge because he was already being kind of creepy at the foot of the bridge. And now he's coming towards us.
No, I think that's absolutely a possibility. And I'll say one other thing about the guys thing, and there are probably people who think we're spending way too much time on this, but if he knew them before this, so not just saw them on the trail, if he was someone they knew, then he was someone in a position of authority who was not friends with them. The way he says guys, to me, that's, you know, is the way that like your high school principal might have said guys to you if he saw you and your friends out at the mall. Right? I mean, he acknowledges your existence and that he knows who you are, but it's not overly friendly. It's just sort of a, guys, you know, if they were friendly with him, if this were someone they knew well, if this was a friend of their parents that they had, you know, cooked hot dogs with, I think he would have said something. Number one, it would have sounded friendlier and it would have been more like, hey, guys. The way he says that to me and everything about those four words, I know it's only four words, and maybe we're putting way too much into this, but everything about it to me says probably stranger, at best knows them in some sort of vague way or in a very sort of authoritarian way, but probably a stranger who is used to dealing with kids or telling kids what to do. That's what I hear when I hear that voice.
And Brett, I agree with you that I think that this is a stranger, and here's why. If it were someone that you knew, first of all, if it were someone that the girls knew, they did take a video of them, and I would be hard-pressed to think that 13, 14-year-olds know someone and have seen their faces before that their family members don't know anything about whatsoever. We'll talk about theories about online communications they may have, but someone that you've seen in person before, I think it is hard to believe that one of their friends, one of their classmates, and one of their family members, or their sister, Kelsey, doesn't know the person who's Bridge Guy. So that's number one of why I do think he's a stranger. Number two, if you knew someone, you probably wouldn't be filming them covertly, because I don't think that Libby necessarily started filming because she thought she was about to be murdered. She thought this was a weird person and she wanted to capture it and maybe show her parents or Kelsey later on to be like, guys, look at this super weird guy I saw on the trails today. I think that's why she was filming. You wouldn't do that if you were seeing someone you knew walk towards you, because all you had to do later on was say, hey, Kelsey, I saw so-and-so at the bridge. You wouldn't have to film it. So that's why I think this is actually a stranger.
That's a good point. We don't know what the girls said, but you got to think, if they knew who this was, at some point they would have said his name, right? They would have said like, hey, Mr. Johnson, what's going on? Why are you telling us to go down the hill? You know, something, just to talk to him, to try and get him to stop acting like a freak, let him go or something like that. Clearly they didn't do that, because if they did, whether we'd heard it or not, this wouldn't still be a mystery 3 years after it happened. And this was, we said it was February 13th. I don't know if we ever said the year, but it was 2017 when this happened. And I can remember, we're going to talk about this some more. And this is one of the things people have said to us when they wanted us to cover this case. Like, they've got the guys, they've got a picture and they've got his voice and they've got a video. How have they not found him? And I can remember sitting in my office. I was working late hours at that time. And I had a television in my office and I always had it turned on, like CNN or whatever. And I can remember when this happened. And I can remember them releasing that photo and thinking, well, they're going to get that guy. They got him. You know, they got the photo of him. A couple days, they'll have arrested this guy. But they haven't. And that's why we're still talking about it today. So after he gets across the bridge, he says, guys, down the hill. At that point, we know that from the bridge, the girls and this man, Bridge Guy, it's a pretty steep walk, but they go down the hill. So down the hill from where they are, up where the bridge is, into sort of a little bit of a forest. They then have to go down another hill. based on where the girls are found, you know, the bridge is a bridge for a reason. There is a creek called Deer Creek, and it's called Deer Creek, and you might be thinking sort of bubbling brook. It's more like a river. It's pretty deep. It's pretty wide. There's only a couple places you can cross it. One of those places is down this hill. They have to cross that creek. They cross it from the south side of the creek to the north side of the creek. Interestingly, it seems like there are houses in this area, because at this point, once you've crossed across the bridge, you're actually on private property, and there are sort of houses not close together. It's a rural area, but there are houses. There is a house. No one was home at the time, but from that house, you can actually see this crossing where this river is. They cross the river. It is possible, and some people have speculated this, that they're sort of out in the open right now. There's a river. It's possible that Abby and Libby might have made a run for it at this point. Whether that's true or not, what we do know for sure is that just across this river, the girls at some point and somehow were killed, were murdered. And that's where their bodies would be found the next day.
And just notice how short of a time that is. They're dropped off around 1:38, 1:45, and they were murdered around 2:30, 2:45. So within an hour.
Yeah, this all happens very fast. And I think as we talk about what we think happened and who we think might have been responsible, that's another thing to remember. This person didn't have a lot of time to do this. They didn't have a lot of time to think about it either. So whatever they did, it's quite possible that they came there that day knowing they were going to do it and they didn't waste any time. We're going to stop there for today. The next time you hear from us, it'll probably be next week, we're going to continue with this. We're going to talk more about the timeline, the things that happened after this point from 2:45 on. We're going to talk more about this video. We're going to talk more about the photo. We're going to talk about what kind of person this could be, whether this is a serial killer, whether it's a local, whether it's someone who knew the girls. We're going to go through all that. And we're going to hope that at the conclusion of our discussion, somebody out there has information that they can share with the police. And I want to go ahead and leave you now with a tip line in this case. The number is 844-459-5786. Again, 844-459-5786. Well, Alice, I won't say this has been the most enjoyable podcast episode we've ever done, but I really hope I was on Twitter today, and they had figured out who was responsible for a 30-year-old murder. And I hope we talked about how we talked to Kelsey and how impressive. I mean, she's awesome, guys. I mean, I know a lot of y'all have heard her on a lot of different podcasts. We just wanted to talk to her. We didn't want to do the recording. We wanted her to feel free to speak without having to worry about being recorded. There are plenty of places you can hear her if you want to hear her, but she is very impressive. And for her to, I don't know how she does it. I mean, if I were her and I had suffered this kind of tragedy, I don't know that I could be sort of as brave as she is. So, I mean, she is
out there advocating for Abby and Libby really every day, in addition to being, I think, a full-time student. So, Kelsey, just an incredible testament to your love for for these girls. And I do think when these murders are solved, it will be in huge part because of the continued advocacy by Kelsey.
Absolutely. And I look forward to that day. And I just hope that we can do our little part to help get there. But like I said, it's not going to be us. It's going to be you guys. So if there's anybody out there who's heard anything, call the police. If for whatever reason you don't want to call the police, you can feel free to send us an email and we will get it to the police. It's prosecutorspod@gmail.com, @prosecutorspod on all the different social medias. You can catch us there. Let us know what you think. There's not a whole lot, but if we've messed anything up at this point, if you have any additional information, if you have anything that you think would be useful, let us know. We will make sure that information gets out there, and we will make sure to clear up anything that we've gotten wrong. So that's all we've got for you today. I hope you will join us next time as we continue this very important case. But until then, I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the prosecutors. Of the way I pronounce Dawn.
I didn't really get that.
I didn't either. I don't know how to pronounce Dawn other than the way I pronounce
it. Of the many things that you pronounce, there's many things to make fun of, but I didn't think Dawn was one of them.
Dawn. 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 I just need to know. I don't know how to pronounce it. Honestly, I'm just kind of more curious than anything, like what the actual pronunciation of Dawn is supposed to be. Dawn. Dawn.
Dawn. Don't say it like that. Oh, that's just like, terrible.
Dog. Dog.
She was being so sweet.
I don't know why she was being so sweet. She's not normally that sweet.
That's not true.
It's like she knew that I...
You had to do a tough case today.